Hey, Podcast Club members. Before we start today's show, I want you to know that our May Podcast Club meetup is on Sunday, May 19th at 12 o'clock noon Central Time. For this month, we will be hanging out for a live Q&A with the Flying Free coaches, several of whom have been featured in past episodes of the Flying Free podcast. So come get any of your questions related to emotional and spiritual abuse answered. Can't make it live? Not a problem. We will be posting the replay on our private Podcast Club podcast. That's right. There's the public Flying Free podcast, which you are listening to right now, and there's a private podcast for everyone who's part of the Podcast Club. Want to be part of the Podcast Club? Well, it costs $400 to produce one episode of the Flying Free podcast. Podcast Club members offset some of that cost by chipping in $5 a month. Go to flyingfreepodcastclub.com to sign up. That's flyingfreepodcastclub.com to sign up. And if you're a member of Flying Free or Flying Higher, you're invited to any of our Podcast Club meetups for free. Just hit the reply button on your next Monday morning resource email. Hi, this is Natalie Hoffman of FlyingFreeNow.com, and you're listening to the Flying Free Podcast, a support resource for women of faith looking for hope and healing from hidden emotional and spiritual abuse. Welcome to episode 265 of the Flying Free Podcast. Today, we are kicking off a mini series of episodes in which you're going to hear from three Christian abuse survivors who were excommunicated from their churches for divorcing their abuser. And this was my experience as well. And if you want to learn more about my story, you can get my new book, All the Scary Little Gods, on Amazon. But I'm not the only one. Thousands of women all over the world who have dared to escape abusive relationships by obtaining legal protection through divorce have been subsequently excommunicated by churches who claim to be representatives of Jesus Christ. Can you imagine Jesus kicking an abuse victim out of his presence for escaping her abuser? It's unthinkable. So let's meet our first guest in our excommunication series. Her name is Marita. Welcome.
Thanks so much, Natalie. I'm so excited to be here.
Okay. So why don't we start off by telling us what denomination were you excommunicated from? Because there are certain denominations that are more excommunicate-y than others. And how many years were you a member in that type of church?
I attended an evangelical free church and I was a member for 15 years.
Okay. All right. Can you tell us a little bit about what your church meant to you? How were you involved? Did you have friends and family there as well? Like, what was the infrastructure in your life related to your church?
Well, I grew up in the church and I always attended a church depending on where I was living. And I have moved a little bit in my adult life, but I actually met my husband at the church that I got excommunicated from. We were married there. We were small group leaders there. The church was about 2,000 people. So, I mean, it was a relatively good sized church. We were, I think, kind of a high profile couple. I had a ministry for foreign women in our community, and that had been going on for about 9 years. And early on, I led a women's Bible study. My husband was a deacon, and he also was a biblical counselor. And I know you're familiar with the whole biblical counseling movement. Anyway, all of our friends were from the church. And within the first few months of our marriage, I sought counseling there, because the church was very big on biblical counseling. So that was kind of their claim to fame. But I started biblical counseling within the first few months of getting married. Then about year 10, I submitted paperwork for couples counseling for both of us, that was against his wishes.
He was a Bible counselor in that church, right?
Yes.
So he must have been one, you must have had other, several of them that were working with
they in the whole biblical counseling movement, it's all lay people, and you know, you go through a certification process and then presto, you're good, you start counseling other people.
Yeah.
And So he was one of those. And it's all based on principles of the Bible, but they very much frown on any sort of information like that's psychological. That's not good. But it's all taken from the Bible, and which, you know, it sounds good, but like they don't believe in depression and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, that because the word depression isn't in the Bible. So therefore,
it doesn't exist.
And, you know, you just need to, you know, pray harder. And so anyway, but yeah, he was part of this whole thing. I was not. And anyway, but when we started couples counseling, that was by the senior pastor, and he did it for 10 years or did it for a year. This is at year 10 for us. And then 4 years later, the couples counseling, of course, didn't help. And actually, the pastor gave up on us. He said, yeah, I can't do anything. And so then 4 years later, I went to there was a counseling pastor, and he was kind of head of all of the biblical counselors. And so I went to him and kind of tried to plead my case. And anyway, and because he was over the biblical counselors and that my husband was one of them, but he did not confront my husband. He told me later that he felt the Holy Spirit would convict him. So he chose not to.
So God doesn't use people then. He just somehow supernaturally something, a note in the sky or something.
Okay. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. So what happened after that then? How did you get to the place where you were trying to get help from these other Bible counselors, of which your husband was one, to the point where you were ready to file for divorce? How many years were you married?
I was married 14 years.
Okay.
I didn't get married until I was older. I was 44 when I got married. It was my first marriage. It was not his first marriage. And, you know,
was he divorced or was his, did his wife die?
Yes. No, he had been divorced a couple of times. And so
why was he allowed to be a Bible counselor if he was a divorcee? I'm just curious. Well, did they allow that?
That's kind of was the, what tripped me up as well, because he had become a Christian after his last divorce.
Ah.
And so anyway, and of course,
if you want to play the game, you have to know the rules. Like if you become a Christian after all of your sin, then then you're good. But if you become a Christian and then you sin in divorce, then you get kicked out. You get the boot. Okay.
Yes, exactly. That is
okay.
That is
so just a note to everyone. If you want to, you know, you want to play the game, you got to know how to play it right.
Yeah. Exactly. So, well, I've got to first tell you a little bit about my marriage and then we'll, you know,
yes, do that.
Launch into my whole divorce story. But he was just, you know, he was kind of a very take charge kind of guy. He had a very dominant personality. He was very bold in his opinions. He was arrogant. He was defensive. I couldn't question him. I certainly could not disagree with him. And he very much enjoyed being the center of attention, but he was also very charming. And when I met him, you know, like I said, I met him at church, and it was kind of one of those typical stories. Unfortunately, of course, at the time I was completely ignorant of all of it, but you know, I was love bombed and he was in a big rush to get married. And sure enough, we got married in 7 months. And, you know, the dream crumbled as soon as we got married, it literally on the honeymoon. And what's crazy is I've heard the story over and over and over.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh yeah, that was me. Anyway, so all the good behavior ended as soon as we got married. And then silent treatment was his preferred method to control me. So, and that started right away. And so, but I was very confused by this because having someone not speaking to you and, you know, and there was no talking either. There was not, you know, or you're not seem to be speaking. No, I'm not, you know, and it's, it seems that, you know, you haven't really, you're not yourself these days because, you know, nope, everything's fine. But it clearly wasn't. And we had horrible communication. And that's what I thought it was. I thought we had communication issues. But anyway, I left at 14 years.
Can I interrupt with a quick question? I'm just curious. Did you ever talk to his ex-wives at all? Just curious.
Well, no, I did not.
Okay.
And yeah, no, I had not.
Because that would be interesting to find out why they divorced him.
Mm-hmm.
Why they got divorced. Yeah.
Right. I found out later we had to go through this intensive. I found out that he left his first wife for his second wife. And I had no idea. I had never, ever he had never told me that in the course of our marriage that he had actually, anyway. So yeah. Again, our communication was just nothing. But anyway, by the time I actually left, he was spending up to 2 months living in the basement and not speaking to me. Mm. And so anyway, so that was, the crazy part was, is he would sit by me in church with his hands raised and amening really loud.
Of course.
And then
play the role.
Leaving in a different car to go home to go live in the basement. And so anyway, so yeah, so that was my marriage. So it was all of a lot of, most of it was about, you know, his reputation and all of this. So then when I left, okay, it was COVID and he's living in the basement again and I'm on leave from my job and, you know, but things were escalating. In my opinion, the silent treatment now that he's living in, he's now doing this basement thing and things are escalating, but I'm also seeing that this is a pattern. I'm starting to become aware and I'm starting to like Google silent treatment because I'm getting the beginning little trickles of information mm-hmm. about all of this kind of stuff. But anyway, so it's COVID and my mom says, come and visit me. And I'm like, you know what? He can ignore me just as easily if I'm in a different place than if I'm here. And so I might as well go. So I did. I packed my suitcase for 6 days. That's what I planned on being gone for 6 days. And I left a note on the counter. And I said, I'm at mom's, you know, don't forget to give the cat the medicine. And so anyway, so it wasn't, I didn't, you know, leave without letting him know where I was or why he claimed I abandoned him. But anyway, on my way to my mom's, and she lives in a different state, I decided, you know what, I'm done. I'm going to tell my whole family of origin, I'm going to tell them what is really going on in this marriage. And so, because up until now, I haven't. I've been silent about all of it. I've bought the line, hook, line, and sinker, you know, you don't ever say anything about your husband, you know, whatever. So I decided that I would tell them what was going on. And they were shocked, but then kind of not shocked. And so because they had witnessed all of this for 14 years as well, but they didn't quite know that it had been as bad as it was. But they did all agree that I needed to talk to my pastor. And so I called and made it a phone appointment to talk to the pastor. I ended up talking to the pastor. I talked to the associate pastor and I talked to, again, that counseling pastor. And I talked to them all several times. I talked to each of them at least 2 times over the next few days. And anyway, I remember one of them asking me if I was afraid of him, my husband, hitting me. And it flew out of my mouth. I said, I'm not afraid of him hitting me. I'm afraid of him shooting me. Anyway, but he had never shot anybody before. I'm guessing that's why they weren't too terribly concerned about that.
Right. You have to have prior shootings in order think someone's dangerous.
Because I'm thinking if someone told me that they were afraid of being shot, you know, you might kind of take it seriously, but they did not. Anyway, once I let the cat out of the bag and I talked to all of them, I knew that they were then going to remove him from being a biblical counselor. And then there was going to be a price to pay because he very much enjoyed that, the prestige of that.
Yeah.
And so anyway, so the bottom line was I never returned home after that. And so
good for anyway, you.
Yeah. So I packed for 6 days and then never returned.
Okay. That's amazing. A lot of victims, it takes several times of doing it that you were able to just make that decision and get out.
No, I was scared though. I mean, I didn't know what was going to happen to me. And all I knew was that it was escalating. It kept getting worse. The punishments kept getting worse. Yeah. And by then though, I've started reading books and, you know, and I'm realizing that, you know what? Crazy things happen once these guys get, you know, and I was really too scared to return. So I don't know what could have, would have happened, you know?
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Okay. So what was the church's reaction then? Were they supportive? Doesn't sound like maybe they were.
Well, no, at first it sounded like they were supportive. They were yes. They were very, very supportive.
Okay.
But they sent us to a 3-day intensive.
Okay. Oh yeah. That's always the solution.
Yes. And so anyway, in that 3-day intensive, the very first words out of the counselor's mouth was, divorce is not an option. We're not going to talk about divorce. And to be quite honest with you, I wasn't even there mentally. I mean, I kind of knew that I couldn't go home, but I was not planning on divorcing. That wasn't really something I was contemplating at that point in time. I was just begging for help, basically.
Yeah.
So anyway, but we spent 3 days discussing forgiveness. And so
you were supposed to forgive him?
Yes. Because the other thing too about biblical counseling, it's all very sin mutualizing.
Yes.
So it's like, well, you're both sinners. And so therefore, basically everything equals out. And not one person is going to be charged with anything. You know, you just have to forgive.
Right.
Just forgive, forgive and forget, you know, that kind of thing.
Really? It's basically saying there's no such thing as abuse, except maybe if you're being beaten a lot.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Anyway, so then after the intensive, which was completely ineffective, because he still wasn't talking to me. So I went back to my mom's. So this whole time I'm like traveling back and forth going, you know, I went out for the intensive and then came back. So then we have to go to our biblical counseling. And so I'm coming back for that. And we did that for about 4 months. And he's still not talking to me. He's not texting me. He's not calling me. He's not speaking to me. So, you know, I get the point. And so anyway, kept coming back. And after 4 months of that, I said in the counseling, I don't want to continue this anymore, but I will continue if we can go to professional counseling. And of course, oh, that, you know, that was like asking him to, you know, get involved in witchcraft or something. I don't know. It was completely, oh, we can't do that. He said that he would think about it. But then he never told me. And so the long and short of it is after 2 months of waiting for his decision about whether or not we could do professional counseling, I filed for divorce.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because you're getting nothing. You're married to a dead jalopy on the side of the road. It's like, what do you do? Let's call it.
Yeah.
Time of death.
Exactly. Time of death. That is exactly what it was.
Yeah. And so what did your church do then at that point when you filed for divorce? What was your church's reaction to that? Were they supportive at first or did they just go right to vilifying you?
Well, no. I mean, I told my biblical counselor and I didn't hear anything from the church. Okay. When I had waited for 2 months and I filed and then I told my biblical counselor at some point in time, I can't remember exactly when, but after a month and a half after I filed, I got a call from my biblical counselor, and she said that the elders have asked me to come into town and that they wanted to meet with me because they wanted to help me. And I remember I started crying. I said, I have been begging for help for years, and now they want to help me a month and a half after I've filed.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's too late.
Yeah.
And so anyway, so that was pretty devastating. And then, you know, a month after that is I got excommunicated. So, but no, and that was kind of interesting because never did I ever hear back from any of the pastors that I originally talked to the very first week that I had left, you know, and I talked to several of them several times and I never heard back from one of them. Not an email, not a text, not a phone call, no nothing.
Is this content resonating with you? I've written a book for women of faith in destructive relationships called Is It Me? Making Sense of Your Confusing Marriage, a Christian woman's guide to hidden emotional and spiritual abuse. You can read reviews and find out more about my book on Amazon.com. It comes in paperback, Kindle, and Audible formats. I've also created a companion workbook for Is It Me, also available on Amazon. This workbook is like 11 power-packed therapy sessions to help you process through the important material you'll be learning from my book. These books are recommended by counselors and therapists all over the United States. I've also got a website specifically focused on helping women of faith find hope and healing. It's called flyingfreenow.com. And I'd love to give you the first chapter of my book and the first chapter of the companion workbook for free when you hop on my mailing list at the top of my website. Those two resources are going to help you figure out if your relationship is normal or destructive. Now, let's get back to our episode. That story, I hear that story all the time. And it's what happened to me too. I don't know what it is about these people. They're all just like, their MO is just to just, it's as if you don't even exist.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So what kind of help do you think they were going to offer you if you were to venture a guess? Because I mean, so they offer you help, you say no, and then a month later they excommunicate you. I don't get it.
No. I don't believe that they actually were going to help me. I think that their help was going to be, I believe, I don't have no idea. This is complete speculation. I think that they were going to tell me if I don't return, they will excommunicate me.
Yes.
And I think that in a real twisted way, they think that that's helping me, that that's a loving thing to do, to let me know that the right thing to do is to return. And if I don't, then this is the consequence. I believe that that's what they were going to do.
Yes.
I don't believe that there was any help whatsoever. I don't see why, if they were going to help me, why did I need to come into town and see them all face to face? And, you know, and it's all, of course, a bunch of men against me.
Exactly.
And, you know,
exactly.
So I just don't believe that there was, I don't have any idea what kind of help. If they were going to confront my husband or do anything, I think that they would have done that. I wouldn't have to come into town for a meeting.
Right. You know, I can tell you from my own experience, because I did go to the meeting where they wanted to help me. And I've talked to other women who have too. And it is exactly what you think it was going to be. That's exactly what it was going to be. The story is like textbook. It just kind of it's the same story across the board. It's just unreal.
Yeah.
Okay. So do you feel like your church represented the heart and character of Jesus Christ throughout this whole process?
I kid you not. During this whole process, and I'm a mess. I'm an absolute mess. I'm living at my mom's. You know, I'm a grown woman. You know, my husband won't speak to me. But all I kept thinking is that my church, if they had been around when the Israelites were being released from Egypt, they'd have been on the side of the road going, go back.
Yes.
Submit for, suffer for Jesus.
Yes.
You know, slavery is for your holiness, because that was kind of the party line that I received. And so anyway, I just feel like it had been 8 months from the time I left and talked to all the pastors till the time I filed. And then it was still a couple months after that when I got excommunicated. But I really do feel like they would have encouraged all the Israelites to go back into slavery. This isn't what God wants for you. You know, pray more, trust God and pray more.
Yes.
Yeah.
Was the excommunication a surprise to you, or?
Yes. Yes.
Tell me what you were thinking.
I could not have been any more surprised. It came in a certified letter. This is how naive I was. I thought, I'm like, oh, that's odd. I'm getting a letter. I'm at my mom's house and it's certified. And the only thing I can think of is it was going to be a letter thanking me for my faithful tithing.
Oh my
because that's the only kind of letters I'd ever gotten from the church is. But and so anyway, so, you know, I open it up and I could not have been any more surprised. The only two other excommunications that I remember from my church and all that time, there was two. One early on was somebody who was addicted to porn. Now, clearly they've stopped doing that, because it's not like porn has diminished in popularity within the church.
Right,
so
right.
They stopped doing that. And then the second one was somebody who had had an affair and wasn't willing to end the affair. So I remember two excommunications.
Okay.
But I clearly wasn't either one of those things. And so I could not have been more surprised.
Okay. Can I read just a little excerpt from your letter? Okay.
Uh-huh.
Your unwillingness to submit to biblical counsel. How many months did you submit to biblical counsel, do you think it was? Years.
Well, years, years.
Yeah. Years, years and years and years. But they accused you of being unwilling to do that.
Yeah.
They must have expected that you would do that until you were on your dying bed, right?
Yeah.
And subsequent divorce without biblical grounds, according to them,
right,
requires us to excommunicate you from the church. Your sin of unbelief and pride, was he excommunicated?
No.
So he doesn't get accused of being an unbeliever or of being prideful for mistreating his wife for 14 years. But your sin of unbelief and pride are ultimately against God.
Mm-hmm.
So says they.
Yeah.
But also your husband, So it's against your husband too.
Yeah.
Your pride against your husband. In other words, here's what I've realized. These churches actually truly believe that husbands have a right to mistreat their wives. That's the bottom line. Because if they didn't, this wouldn't be happening.
Right.
And if you don't submit to mistreatment, you are prideful and you are an unbeliever. It demonstrates a willingness to sin unrestrained against God. You have unrestrained sin against God for running as fast as you can from someone who's abused you for 14 years. They don't have unrestrained sin against God. Just you do for not being willing to be a whipping boy for, your husband. Yeah. A whipping boy, I mean that in an allegorical way. You are known in this body. This sin is not hidden and the body is impacted. Whether you are blind to your sin or simply don't care, now they're accusing you of not caring.
Yeah.
And you're the one who, I'm guessing you're the one who initiated every single time for getting help. Yeah.
Yes.
But you don't care. Mm-hmm. The guy who doesn't talk to you, he cares. But you, for trying to get help for 14 years, you don't care.
Yeah.
We don't know. They're confused by this. Again, because in their universe, in their universe, women should like to get whooped. Why don't you, you little sinner? Get back under there. Any of us can fall into sin, but high-handed sin, they called your sin high-handed. Yeah. Oh my gosh, I just can't even, I am literally crawling out of my skin. Your high-handed sin against God is a dangerous domain, especially for those that claim Christ and have identified with his church. This is satanic. I just want you to know this is satanic. These words are written from a place of alignment with the adversary, not alignment with Jesus Christ. They have twisted everything and turned it upside down.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I will stop there.
I think they will have an answer someday for this.
Oh, they absolutely will. They absolutely will. I want other people to understand because there's people who are listening who have gone through this and some of them might even be crying right now because it's going to bring up a lot of stuff. Others are going to be like maybe upset about it, but not really understand it. But I think it's important for us to know how it makes a woman feel in her body to be accused by the devil, who is the accuser of the brethren, to be accused by the devil through people who claim to be representatives of Jesus Christ, who claim to be shepherds. These are not real shepherds, by the way. These are pretend shepherds. They are pretending to shepherd the flock and they usher in the wolves and say, hey,
they're protecting the wolves. They're protecting.
Exactly. Yes. They're allowing the wolves to come in and then they're protecting the wolves when the wolves attack the sheep. That's why I'm saying it's totally satanic. This is not Christ. So how do you feel in your body when I read those words back to you or when you read them the first time?
It's a gut punch. And I just want to say, how dare you? This is like when I come up off of the floor after sobbing. You know?
Right, right.
I have been a member of this church for years and have, you know, I'm very much a part of the church. And I mean, I'm not just like the Sunday morning churchgoer. I'm there. I'm serving, you know. And so for them to decide that I don't love the Lord. Because I don't think you read that part, but they tell me that I don't love the Lord. And I'm like, how dare you?
Yeah.
How dare you? And they preach all the time about not judging motives and things like that, that you can't do that. But they told me that I don't love the Lord. And it's like, well,
exactly. Exactly.
That's nuts. That, anyway.
They don't want you to question their motives.
Right.
That's why they say those things.
Yes.
Yeah. And the other thing, this is such a betrayal. You trusted them for 14 years. You kept going to them, trusting that they had your best interest in mind when they were all the time on the back end, whether they knew it consciously or not, but I believe they're aligned with the enemy. Again, whether they know it or not, they are definitely not aligned with Christ. They're plotting on the back end to make sure that you continue to be in the jaws of the wolf that's been assigned to you.
Mm-hmm.
And you trusted them to help you to get out. And when you finally got out by the skin of your teeth, they're going to come after you and say that you don't love Jesus. It's just unbelievable. All right. Yeah. First of all, how are you doing today? How long ago was this? When did this all happen?
I left 3.5 years ago.
Okay.
And then 2.5 years ago, I relocated. I had to go to a different city and I started all over. I'm 60 years old. You know, fortunately, I have a job. That's the blessing. I had a job and I could transfer. And so I did. Okay. Because when I realized I didn't have a husband to go back to and I didn't have a church to go back to, that kind of made it easy. I'm like, well, I've got to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
I don't have anything left.
Yeah. There.
My whole life was wrapped up in, you know, in the church. And so anyway, so I transferred and I moved to a different city. And it's been crazy because through like Facebook groups that you have and other people the same, that for Christian women who are, have escaped these kinds of marriages, I have become friends. We have a group of 12 at this point in my particular city.
That is amazing.
We meet regularly. I mean, it's not like we have meetings, but we have a group chat and we're constantly helping one another because we're all in different stages of either healing or getting out. And so that's what's amazing to me because, you know, for those of us who have gone through this, even our supporters, it's so confusing because it hasn't been talked about very much until now. And so that's what I so appreciate about your show and what you're doing is because it's just educating people like me who were just oblivious. And then when you finally realize, oh, that's my story. The feeling that we have the 12 of us, I mean, we literally have a sisterhood.
Yeah.
And I mean, literally, if somebody texted at 3 a.m. and says, somebody come get me, we'd go. It would be more than one person. I mean, it would be a group of us. And so, you know, we're very much there for each other. And it just, I just wish other people would start realizing that, yeah, this is out there and it's in the church. I think that that's the big problem. I think that everybody thinks, oh, that's not in the church. But the problem is it is in the church.
Yes.
That's where we need help because there's domestic violence places all over. But everybody kind of thinks, oh, but that's not here. You know,
well, and when you think of domestic violence shelters, you think of people who are, you know, getting beat,
right?
They're being physically abused. And mostly in the church, I think a lot of like my ex-husband, he never would have hit me.
No,
he knew where to draw the line,
exactly,
where he wouldn't get caught or where he wouldn't lose his reputation. And I could tell there were times he wanted to hit me, but he didn't.
So,
and there were times that I would look at him like, do it, just do it.
And when I went through the year of counseling with the senior pastor, he actually said to me, he said, at least you're not being beaten.
Yeah.
And I was so shocked by that. And I remember saying, I said, I didn't realize that was the standard you're holding these men.
Yes.
You know, and so.
Yeah, their standards are basically don't beat your wife, you know, don't cheat on her.
Yes. Yes.
And then make sure that you, you know, that you show up at home most of the time. That's the standards for men.
Right.
Good job, church.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And if your wife leaves, have no fear. We will just excommunicate her.
Yeah, exactly. What happened to me? And what's really ironic is from what I've heard, I still have in no contact, but my husband doesn't go to church now at all, or doesn't go there anyway.
Yeah. 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 Mine doesn't either. Yeah. Mine doesn't either. It's Oh, so my goodness.
I am in church. I have a new church and I am going in it anyway, but
yeah.
I don't know if I'm going to become a member again though, you know?
Yes. If I'm not going to church right now, but I have sworn to myself that if I ever do get involved in a church again, I will never sign any papers with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
I will love them because they are my brothers and sisters in Christ. But I'll never sign contracts with them.
Right.
Yes. I think I just had this thought just a few days ago. I thought, you know, the place where the most persecution against Christians is actually happening is in the church. That is where Christians, at least in, you know, these our modern countries are being persecuted, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. If you had one message to offer to Christians who say that they love and follow the teachings of Jesus Christ, what would that message be?
Now, are you talking about the people who aren't being abused or the people that are being abused?
Just anyone who's a Christian. Like,
I would say, believe her. Believe her. Yeah. I mean, nobody makes this. I mean, okay, yes, you might have some sort of 0.00% of people who made this up, but most of us aren't making it up. I was begging for help for years, and nobody wanted. I don't necessarily know that no one believed me. They didn't know how to help, you know. And the other thing too is I was keeping quiet because I was maintaining his reputation, and I was praying more and fasting more and memorizing scripture, and you know, I was doing all the stuff that I was told to do that was going to. And you know what? That this is my answer. My answer is, you cannot change someone else by praying enough and fasting enough and believing. If they don't want to be changed by God, they're not going to be changed by God. So this whole, I cannot do it. But I did believe it for many, many years. If I just did this enough, then he would, you know, be nicer to me. You know, we would have a happy marriage, you know, whatever.
Yeah. But you're put in this impossible situation where you are actually responsible for fixing this abusive person. And that's not possible. I think churches, when a person comes up and like you, presents like you, and it's been going on for a while, why don't they just say, you know, your husband doesn't seem to care about the relationship. You don't have to stay. Do you want to get out? If you want to get out, if you feel like you're done, we are 100% behind you. We'll help you. We'll help you get out of this relationship. And then if he comes back and says, well, what are you doing? That's not fair. Say, well, sounds like you need to change your behavior. Maybe, you know, if you did that, it would work out. But if you're not willing to do that work, then she's going to leave. It's basically just supporting you with your boundary.
Right.
Your boundary and actually teaching you that you have a boundary, that you can say, this relationship is not working for me and I don't have to stay in it for the rest of my life.
Yeah, no, I was in that church trying to be, you know, I was reading all the marriage books. All of it was the wife submit more, pray more, you know, keep a cleaner house, have more sex. You know, that was all the line that I was given. And I'm really glad I don't believe that now.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't work.
It doesn't work. It doesn't work. Yeah.
And when you're married to a healthy person, you do all of those things together. You both do those things. That's not the rule book for women. It's a rule book for adults, healthy adult human beings who want to have interpersonal relationships.
Right.
Whether you're married or not. Mm-hmm. All right. This was amazing to have this conversation with you. I'm fascinated how your story is very similar to mine in a lot of a lot of aspects. Are you in Flying Higher? Or not?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Well, I'm going to do a plug for Flying Higher anyways. If you were in it, I was going to say, do you want to talk about it a little bit? But you're not. But I am going to do a plug for Flying Higher. You don't have to be. But I want to let the listeners know about it because Flying Higher is a program for women who are divorced. And there are a lot of them who got excommunicated when they divorced their abusive husband. And in that program, we do work on rebuilding your life. So we don't necessarily address past trauma. We don't do anything like that. It's more moving forward, like from the point of your divorce forward. So we do a lot of work on parenting with older kids. That's like a big topic. Restarting a career or going back to school, new relationships, like dating relationships. And there's several courses. And we do weekly coaching. Actually, this last year, we did book studies and we went through 12 transformative books together. And this next year in 2024, we're going to be doing more book studies if you want to. Those are optional. The coursework is always there for you to go through, but the book studies are just for fun. But we're going to do 12 fun fiction books together. So kind of like a little book club on the side. But people have made good friendships in Flying Higher too. So if you're interested in that, you can learn more by going to joinflyinghigher.com. I don't talk about that very much on the podcast because most of our listeners are still in their marriage relationships, trying to figure out what's going on. But there are a few that are already divorced and maybe you're wondering if there's anything for you. And if you're feeling lost, then that's a good place to make some connections with people. All right, you guys, that's all we have.
Thanks so much, Natalie.
Hey, beautiful butterfly. Thank you so much for listening. If you liked this episode, be sure to subscribe and then consider leaving a rating and review so others can find us. To connect with me and get a free chapter of my book, head over to flyingfreenow.com. And until next time, fly free.